And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays podcast. I am Zach, he is Pat. And Pat, I mean, does it get any more exciting, fun, entertaining than it's been over the last week? I mean, Rays baseball has been awesome. World Cup has been awesome. It's just a great time to be a sports fan right now.
Right? It's been incredible. It's been a huge summer of sport. I mean, for me, the baseball's been great. With the World Cup, my favorite clips are the kind of friendly banter or like camaraderie yes. that happens between two countries that would never interact before. I think on day one, Mexico and South Korea won their games on day one. And so like mm-hmm. Mexicans and South Koreans were celebrating together. Right. And Scotland, of course, and Norway fans turning up at random baseball games. England fans made big friends with Michael Harris. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that story.
Yeah, Michael story. Mm-hmm.
And Michael Harris has also mm-hmm. picked he correctly predicted the Mexico and the Norway game score as well. So, Michael, can you please predict us to win against Argentina, please? and yeah, it's been a great time. I think the group stages are always the funnest because everyone feels like they have a chance and the vibes are just really like low stakes and fun. And then when you get to the business end, it's all really serious and people, definitely not me, get really heated and passionate and emotional. I couldn't say that I do that, but people do. And I will say my favorite thing that came out of last night was everyone was leaving the stadium in Miami chanting, there'll be no effing rowing in New York. There'll be no effing rowing in New York. So hold that, Haaland. But more importantly, I think the New York Yankees and Seattle Mariners can hold that too.
They can. And I think like maybe all of baseball from like 2008 to like maybe 2013, 14, 15, because that was the era of Evan Longoria. And that's maybe one of the most important things that happened in all of sport this weekend mm-hmm. is Evan Longoria's retirement jersey. His number has been officially retired. No one else will ever wear number 3 again. I don't know that anyone else would. I could never see it happen for anyone else to wear that number ever. And he's been inducted into the Rays Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a contentious and exciting series between the New York and the Rays. That was a fun series to watch. A little solid series to end the first half with the Mariners winning the first two games, not looking awesome as we're recording live during the last two innings of the final game. We've won the series already, so a good series there. The draft was exciting. We got a ton of stuff to talk about today, so we're going to just hop right into it. If this is your first time joining us, we thank you for joining us here. We have it's a jam-packed show. You picked a good show to hop in on. If you are coming in and you've seen the show before, appreciate you guys. Do us a huge favor. Just check if you're subscribed or following on whatever platform you enjoy the show on so you know when we go live. If you got thoughts on anything we're talking about today, drop a comment over on YouTube. We'd love to hear from you guys. So let's hop right into it, and let's get right into the Yankees and Rays series. Earlier this week, it was a 4-game set. Rays split it with the Yankees 2-2. The Yankees get the bread. The Rays get the meat in the middle of the sandwich there. Before we go game by game, any thoughts on the series overall?
It's a shame that we couldn't quite win the series. I think I'm happy with a split. I am happy with a split. But with the Rays so good at home, the Yankees coming in really scuffling, we could have really just killed the division if we did a little bit better. But I said, if we, you know, a split means that if anything, the Yankees have gained no ground and now they've got less games left to gain the ground. So it's an overall favorable result now because the Yankees didn't gain any ground. They are the ones that need to gain ground. It's a shame we couldn't take a little bit more advantage, particularly in that last game of the series where you had Rasmussen on the mound. That was not a real opportunity there, I think. Other than that, I'm happy with a split. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, all of us going into that last game, seeing Drew Rasmussen on the mound, had visions of a Series W there that we felt pretty good about, especially also considering that the Yankees were committing to a bullpen day. They ended up using 8 pitchers to get through the game. Seven pitchers to get through the game. And so you felt like, hey, like this is an opportunity for us to close it out, to get to a 5-game lead on them, to really like cement the momentum going in our direction. Not that the momentum hasn't already been going in our direction, but to just cement that a little bit. And it would have felt even better after losing the first game. And they're starting to, I mean, at least for me, there was a feeling of, man, did we just give the Yankees what they needed to kind of turn their season around a little bit and giving them the ability to maybe launch through and either, you know, win the series against us. The fact that we came right back, won the next game, dominated the third game, and then felt like with Drew going out there, we had our chance to really lock it in there. Did definitely feel disappointing, but I think overall it's really clear that at least at this point, these are the two best teams in the American League. And so seeing, you know, those two, us two going at it, it really felt that way. Like it felt like there was, you know, some high level at bats going on, felt like the Rays pitching was overall pretty solid and held up against what I think most people would probably say is the strength of the Yankees, which is their pitching. Felt like we were going bar for bar with them on excellence there. And it just unfortunately turned out that our best guy had his worst start of the year. It was going to happen at some point this season. It's just kind of a bummer that it happened at the spot that it did.
Yeah. And we got absolutely Ben Rice all season. It felt like all series. Mm-hmm. Cause you were like, hey, Judge is out, but Ben Rice has kind of picked up that mantle and is carrying. So it's a shame, but you're right. These are the two best teams. The Rays seem to be a little bit more consistent than the Yankees, hence the 4-game lead. And like, I will admit the Yankees are slightly more beat up than the Rays are. They're missing Judge. They're missing Fried. They're missing Rudon. So the Yankees have ways to get better, but we'll talk probably later in the episode about some ways the Rays could get better. So it almost feels the playoffs are not this simple, where it always works out this way, but it feels as if this could be the ALCS.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the rest of the American League right now, there's nobody that I'm scared of. I mean, Chicago is a great story and happy for them. They've got some good players. Not scared of them. Not scared of the Rangers. Not scared of the Guardians. Seattle, we've just beat them twice. It's not looking great for a sweep. But we've just beat them twice. And then, you know, the rest of the American League. I feel it's crazy how good I feel about this team, considering what we thought this season was going to be going into it. We're talking about this before the episode, looking back a little bit, and we'll do this a little bit more next week as we're kind of post All-Star break, kind of looking back on the beginning of the season and what our predictions were. But it is pretty amazing where the Rays have gotten to. And it's because, you know, after a, you know, you think about the game one of this series where you have Jax, who's been a great starter for us, going out there against Schlittler. Schlittler, you know, had been struggling a little bit. We thought maybe we could get one over on him. We get dominated and lose 5-1, decisive loss, and came back out and won the next two games. It's that mentality that the Rays have had all season long that has allowed them to climb to this level of success.
Yeah, shut him out in game 3 as well.
Yes.
Shane was great in that game.
Going up against Cole as well.
Yeah, yeah. The Rays own Gerrit Cole, low-key. Since he moved to the Yankees, Astros Gerrit Cole, that was different gravy. But Gerrit Cole doesn't actually – Yankees Cole doesn't actually scare me that much. And he's also, you know, been in and out of being injured. He's on the backside of his career now. I think he's starting to get a bit older. Ian Seymour also had a hell of an outing, actually, in game 2. We need to talk about that because he struck out like a million guys.
12 strikeouts.
In 5 1/3 innings, may I add. 12 strikeouts in 5 1/3. So he got 16 outs, 12 of them via strikeout. I didn't know he was that kind of guy. I didn't know he had that in him.
Well, and again, that's you do. I think we saw sort of the best and the worst a little bit of the Yankees in this series. You know, those middle two games, I think the Yankees struck out like 20. What was the total? It was, I think, 23 times in those middle two games. Like, that's crazy. And but you also see the Ben Rice, you see the Trent Grisham, you see Dominguez when he can make it happen, Bellinger when he can make it happen. You see that there it's very much a boom or bust offensive team, and you they are so capable of the goose egg or the 12 run outing.
Yeah.
And I think what the reason why they have struggled so much this relatively speaking, they're still a very good team and they're the second best team in the American League right now. The reason that they are not the best, though, is because of the volatility of their lineup without Judge. They're just not able to consistently get excellent offensive performances. That's just very hit and miss. And this series was a great sort of exemplar of that.
100%. I was also really happy with how we did in those first two games against the Mariners, because the Mariners have built themselves on pitching, and we put up 13 runs in the first two games. We get to Luis Castillo. We get to Logan Gilbert, two of their best. We couldn't get to Hancock, but he left pretty early and the Mariners actually had to bullpen their way through it. But we managed to compete against top of the line pitching there.
Yeah, the only guy that we really got stumped by in this last week was Schlittler, who didn't blank us, but he went eight innings, one earned given up, four hits, no walks, eight strikeouts. Unfortunate. I mean, that one of the more dominant performances that I've watched so far this year from Schlittler. And just unfortunate that we caught him bouncing back from some rough performances. He was just unhittable.
Yeah, and that happens. That happens when the kind of guy that's the favorite to win the Cy Young comes up against you. There's a reason why. They're the favorites. So it was a shame, but we move. Rays are continuing to give up runs here in the ninth inning.
8-2 now, not great.
I'm going to keep tabs on the Yankees-Nats game, which is still hanging in the balance. The Yankees up 4-3 heading into the ninth. So it looks most likely like we're going to finish the official first half of the season first in the AL East with a three-game lead in the division, I think, is what was likely. But I'll tell you if the Nationals rally in the ninth or not. So with that all in mind, first half over. We'll probably talk more about that next week, but just give me a quick sentence. How are you feeling?
Better than I ever could have imagined. We both, to begin the season, had our predictions of this team. Neither of our predictions were as good as this team has been. They have the pitching, despite the injuries, has been what we expected. And the offense led by Junior continuing to be excellent with a recent power surge like nothing you could. Like 2 weeks ago, I was thinking to myself, man, those homer numbers really aren't what I expected they were going to be ending the first half. And then he said, hey, watch this, and just went nuclear and has been continued to go nuclear. And so he and Aranda and Yandy have carried the offense, and then everybody else has just been doing enough. I mean, it's been a bit of a rotating group of guys behind them, with, whether it's Chandler, whether it's Valade, whether it's DeLuca off and on the injuries, Williamson off and on the injuries, Mesa Jr., Mullins turning things around. Yeah. Like, there's been a lot of guys but they're all doing just enough to support the big three, who are the engine of this team. And are like, I think it's, I think there are a lot of teams that have three guys that they're like pretty happy with at the top of their lineup. But to really look at what the Rays have there, three dudes above a 140 WRC plus consistently, to have that at the top of your lineup is just special. And man, it just, we'll talk about it later in the episode too, but the things that we're hearing about with the Rays' views and the deadline just gets me excited about what the final version of this team could be.
100%. And that offense, a three-headed demon, the rest doing enough to kind of, I would say, what would you rank this offense as comparison to the league? Probably like around league average, probably maybe a smidge above league average offense.
Yeah, I would put it like top. I think it's a little better than league average. I'd probably put it like maybe bottom of the, maybe like 10th, like 10th or 11th. Because, and right. I think that it's because of those three. But I think it's a right around that like 10, 11 range.
Yeah. And then with that, we couple that with probably a top five rotation.
Yeah.
Because this rotation, missing Ryan Pepiot, has been excellent. Now, the thing about the rotation is, I think inning per inning, they're right up there with any rotation in baseball. The problem is we've got a lot of guys that are on innings limits, which means that we are having to hand it over to what I would call right now a kind of in and out bullpen, which will occasionally look excellent and then occasionally look a bit like, oh, we could do with one extra guy that we can rely on in high leverage. But the rotation plus like a decent offense, a top rotation, and a kind of in and out bullpen is apparently good enough to be the best in the American League, though. And what's exciting about that is we are in such a good, strong position, right? We're going to have at least a 3-game lead in the division heading into the break. And like, if we're talking about playoff spots, we're like, what, 10 games up on the third wild card, something like that. That's such a strong position to be in, especially because you go, right, there's definite easy ways to improve this team.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, kind of to sort of summarize what we were just talking about, you know, right now the Rays sit at 6th in baseball in WRC+, and they're 7th in WAR, in F4, in baseball right now from an offensive perspective. And they're hovering right around, you know, I think it was 8th and 9th in sort of the top pitching statistics. So this is a team that I think is also playing more than the sum of its parts, because there's a lot of opportunistic hitting happening. There's a lot of, you know, in big moments, you know, having Brian Baker being as good as he's been in the late innings, having Kevin Kelly being as good as he's been, the bullpen numbers look bad because, like you said, we're doing some bulk stuff is happening with some of the pitchers that are, you know, sort of getting caught up in the reliever metrics. We're having to be creative sometimes with the bullpen because we've had some injuries there. So the overall numbers don't look great, but I think kind of you're saying, inning for inning, we're just watching how good these guys are. And the offense is just doing just enough to be sort of that top fringe top five, for sure top 10 offense. And it's, I mean, with those numbers there, a significant addition to either side catapults this team to, you know, as good as the record has been, there is room to go upward because there are, like you just said, clearly identifiable weak points. Second base, clearly identifiable weak points. Shortstop. Defense is great. Offense is clearly a weak point. The outfield is shaky offensively. And from the pitching perspective, we could clearly benefit from a proven starter to inject into this rotation to allow some guys to maybe go back into a role that better fits them and strengthen the bullpen and put less pressure on some of the inning limits guys that we have, right? If they added a bullpen arm, would do the exact same thing, right? So there's clearly identifiable areas where the team can get better. But as it is, best record in the American League by 3 games.
Right, 100%, 100%. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But I think we need to throw our attention now to the kind of other stuff, mainly the future of the Rays past this season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because there's been a lot of developments on that. I think the big headline, of course, was yesterday was the first day of the 2026 MLB draft, where the Rays had the number 2 overall pick, their highest in a very long time. It might be the highest since like 2008. And they picked, of course, out of Fort Worth Christian High School, Grady Emerson, which was MLB.com's number 1 ranked prospect in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, the if you've been following, which I'm sure a lot of Rays fans have been, because we've had this number 2 overall pick, we've been talking about it a lot. The sort of the discussion that had been around these players as we're getting up to the draft was that Rock was the more MLB-ready player, the more complete player, the player that if you draft him today, he could be playing for your team early next year. Maybe you could even force him up this year if you really wanted him. and he's going to be a real deal maker, or excuse me, a deal changer at shortstop, and that's what you're getting with him. The word on Emerson is, hey, this guy has a ceiling that's above anybody else in this draft. He is a guy that is a 65 to 70 grade, which is 60 is sort of the highest that you would, which is that sort of saying you are a above average MLB player. Anything above that, we're now talking about all-star type potential player. And Emerson grades out as 65 overall. So we're saying not even just like one specific, you know, trait is grading there, but overall he's grading out to be a fringe all-star talent. Now, obviously he's 18 years old, just coming out of high school. So there's a lot of projection going into that, but the ceiling is incredibly high with him. And that is why, like you said, MLB.com, a lot of other projection sites had him as number one because of that potential. Now, the White Sox obviously did a lot of work on Rock and on Grady, of course. And so they made the decision to go with Rock, I think possibly because they wanted an immediate impact player, because they have a little bit of a window with some of their guys sort of making things happen and kind of doing something they haven't done in a long time, which is compete. So I can see them making that decision. Whereas the Rays, you know, they, of course, they didn't have an option. They had to wait and see what the White Sox did. But I think the Rays were very happy to take a guy with incredible potential, with a team that has enough talent already at the major league level that they feel comfortable there, enough capital in the minor leagues to make additions where necessary without relying on exclusively those guys in the minor leagues to be the improvements to the roster. They can make those trades and make that thing happen and allow Emerson to develop in the minors and allow that time there and be comfortable with that. And I think the Rays were absolutely ecstatic to get him. I'm ecstatic about him. The hit tool is what you're going to hear about a lot when you hear people talk about him, as people say it's one of the best they've seen in a long time. There is optimism about his power, being a guy that they, you know, maybe can get to a sort of a 20 home run type of situation later in his career as he develops. The arm and the fielding is excellent. The speed is perfectly fine. It's not, you know, it's not Chandler Simpson or anything, but it's perfectly acceptable. Just a very well-rounded prospect with a lot of projectable traits. Couldn't be happier that the Rays got him.
Yeah, I mean, with the draft, they always do these player comps, don't they? Where they go, hey, yes, if it works out, he's probably going to be a bit like this player. Do you know what name gets attached to Emerson a lot? Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah.
Imagine having a Bobby Witt Jr. on your team, right? Like, this guy's favorite to win MVP this year.
So, oh, imagine.
We're not going to go there.
Not going to go there. But
the baseball gods might have given us a do-over on that. Because Chalowski, they comped a lot to kind of Dansby Swanson, Brandon Crawford, where they're like kind of slightly above average hitter, but a really good fielder. And like really steady. Meanwhile, you know, Emerson, I don't think Emerson's going to have the speed that Witt has.
Yeah.
But he's got a really nice swing. Like you said, the hit tool's there, but he does have some pop in there as well. Loads to like about him. I mean, there were rumors about Von Lackey and Jackson Flora as well. Those were the kind of other two kind of upper tier prospects in the draft. Flora, of course, the pitcher, who ended up going to the Giants. And then we have Lackey, who went to the Twins 3 overall. I mean, the thing about Lackey that was so appealing was that he is a really good hitting catcher. Did that appeal to you at all? Would you kind of want the Rays to go more for that premium position or that position?
I think we talked about this a little bit last week. I think at the beginning of this offseason, I would have maybe said yes, but I don't know if you guys watched the Futures game today, but I think we're okay for catcher for the future, for right now. I feel way more confident than I felt before the season began that catcher is covered. in our farm system. And so, like, honestly, I saw where they were coming from. All the folks that were pitching for Lackey. I think if we had been picking third and we ended up getting Lackey, I would have been fine with that. You know, I totally could have, you could totally talk yourself into him. Same thing if you're picking fourth and you get Flora, I think you're fine with it. But I think it was a clear 1-2, and the 1-2 were sort of interchangeable for a lot of people. I think for me, Emerson was the clear best available option there. So to get
We're back.
I think maybe Rock's family or somebody associated with Rock, maybe a burner for him, hacked in, didn't like sort of the Grady Emerson talk, and tried to scramble us a little bit there. But just really happy that we got him. You know, Vaughn would have been, if we were picking third, we would have been happy with Vaughn, but very happy with Grady.
Yeah, I feel the exact same. The Rays strategy has always been very transparent and very simple. Don't worry about like projecting how they're going to fit on your team in 3 years' time, because that's just so unpredictable. Right. So much can change. And so don't bother doing that. Just take whatever the best player on the board right now is, according to your own kind of projection system. Like, who is the best player? Forget position, forget high school, forget college. Who is the best player according to your own evaluation right now? Just take them.
Yeah.
And that's what they did with Emerson. And to kind of lead on to the point that you're talking about with catching, I think it is worth mentioning for anyone that don't know that the Futures game took place today. The Rays had a couple of participants in that. Theo Gillen, the Rays' number one prospect, played. He batted ninth, but picked up an RBI single in that game. The AL, by the way, dominated. They trounced the NL in the Futures game. And in large part, thanks to the MVP of that game, Rays catcher Nathan Flewelling. Flewelling hit a huge home run in that game, and has been absolutely destroying it in Bowling Green this year. Already hit 16 home runs. He's doing a fantastic job, is Flewelling. And may very well be the answer at catcher coming forward. That with Caden Bodine, who is correct, also up in Double A and playing very well there as well.
Yeah, I mean, listen, at almost every level, we say it almost every week, if you're ever bored on a night where the Rays have an off day, go check out the minor leagues, man. There is exciting stuff happening. Go watch you some Theo Gillen. Go find some Bodine. Go find some Flewelling. Go and see if Hopkins is starting in AAA. Like, there is exciting stuff happening. The future is so bright for this team. And I think, you know, kind of going back to what we talked about with our thoughts on this season as a whole, I think we kind of were of the opinion that this is a season where we're going to do the best that we can. We think this team can compete, but man, we're so excited about the future because of these guys that we think are going to be good. A lot of those guys that we thought were going to be good are stepping it up even further than we even imagined. I did not predict this meteoric of a rise for like Gillen or Flewelling or Bodine. I didn't predict that at all. So they've been exceeding expectations so far, to the point now where, you know, Gillen could easily be like a top 15, top 10 prospect by the end of the year, the way he's playing. And so it's just super exciting to watch the future of this team. And then to add into that system a Grady Emerson, the other guys that they have drafted. We drafted another shortstop with our 34th pick. And then with the 45th pick, we drafted a pitcher out of Liberty with a super high and super high intensity fastball with a very interesting arm slot as well. So you've got just so much that's going on in the development arm of the Rays to support what has been a significantly above expectations prospect on the major league level. Man, it's been a fun first half of this year.
100%. And I wouldn't have it any other way. You know what? Actually, before we go any further, I've got something really important to tell you.
Okay.
and it can't wait any longer. And I need to tell you about where you can get more excellent razor power like the stuff you're wearing right now. And that is shop.rblsports.com. You can use that website to get the best apparel for the Lightning, the Rays, the Rowdies, the Bucks, the Sun. All of them are there. And you can use the promo code Flappy to get 10% off whatever your order is. F-L-A-P-P-Y, like those Flappy boys. Shop.rblsports.com. Go there, celebrate this amazing first half of baseball with some Rays gear.
It's been an inspiring first half. Go get the best gear inspired by the Rays. Shop.rblsports.com. 1,000%.
Heck, you might have been enjoying the World Cup. You want to get your fix on soccer? Well, you've got one right in the Bay Area. You've got two teams, men and women's team. You've got the Sun and the Rowdies. Get yourself down to Al Lang or wherever you play now.
Absolutely do it.
Yeah, it's well worth your time. And you can also go watch the game and then go watch the Rowdies or some podcast after to hear all about it.
There's just so much amazing stuff happening. The Rowdies, by the way, if you're not watching the Rowdies, you're doing yourself a disservice because the Rowdies are kind of a machine right now. Just won another 2-0 result last night. They're kind of on fire. So absolutely do that. And then if you want to read about some of those teams, you can go to rblrsports.com. You can hit up the round table every Monday morning for Rays stuff. But there's articles from all sorts of directions that are going to be there at rblrsports.com. Go check it out.
Love the round table. It's my favorite piece of Rays content that exists, genuinely. You get kind of perspectives from all over the place. Sometimes it's about prospects. Sometimes it's breaking down a particular player. Sometimes it's the fan experience. Sometimes it's kind of big picture. It's so good. I don't think there's a better piece of regular Rays content that exists anywhere.
1,000%.
Yeah. So now, looking ahead a little bit, we're at the end of the first half. We'll be talking kind of more first half, kind of ups, downs, superlatives, those kind of things, how well we predicted the season later next week. So be sure to tune in for that. But what I do want to do is I want to look ahead a little bit to the second half, because that is going to be a series against the Red Sox. We've got a day-night doubleheader to start the second half because of a game that got rained off earlier. Correct. Before we then hit the road for four games against the Blue Jays as well. So we are busy as soon as we get going. We're playing a lot of games very quickly, an eight-game road trip against divisional opponents. The Red Sox are red hot right now as well. So it's a bit of a scary time to face them. But also, we're going to see Junior Caminero in the home run derby. We're going to see a bunch of guys in the All-Star game. And of course, my favorite time of year, the trade deadline coming up. I put a lot of things to you first there, Zach, in one go. Hope we'll go chronologically. Home run derby, how are you feeling?
Super excited that Junior's going back. It's just obvious that the dude wants to win it. I'm going to be watching every second of it because, in addition to Junior, if you're a fan of the show for a long time, you know that I'm a big Jack Catalione fan. He plays for the Royals. He was a Florida Gator, go Gators. And he's going to be at the Derby as well. Very excited to see him hit. It's going to be insane. I think that if you are in the outfield, you should keep your head on a swivel, because when those guys light up a line drive, watch out. Just PSA, just be careful, please. Junior's going to annihilate some baseballs. Going to be a bunch of fun. With the All-Star game, also want to mention, shout out to Nick Martinez getting added to the All-Star game roster. Well-deserved. One of the best seasons of his career. Been awesome to see. By the way, I'm going to continue to pat us on the back for not being concerned about him going into the season after his poor spring training. We believed in Nick Martinez from the beginning, and he has done nothing but reward our faith with amazing performances all year long. Very excited to see him teeing it up with the rest of the All-Stars that the Rays are sending. It's a great group. I don't have too many quibbles with people that were left off. I would have liked to see Aranda there. I would have liked to see Kevin Kelly there, but I'm pretty happy with the contingent that the Rays are sending.
Yeah, 100%. Five is a really good number to send. Not many teams get to send five players to the All-Star game. So great. I wondered if Rasmussen might start the game, but they've given that to Dylan Cease because Rasmussen started a while ago now. So he would have been kind of in. But I'd imagine he might come in for an inning for sure. Do you have an opinion on the – because Schlittler's already pulled out. He says he's not going to pitch at the All-Star game right. because he feels like it would put him out of rhythm. And I remember there was that year where the Astros basically pulled out all of their players in one go. Do you have an opinion on whether or not the Rays should actually play in the All-Star game or kind of just take that time out and kind of prepare for a division chase?
I don't really care for the pitchers. I would say that the starters, it's that one. I think for the starters, it definitely is one of those where if you're not starting the game, I think that there's going to be a lot of, you know, let's be very careful with our guys out there. I'm like, if Baker gets an inning, awesome. I love it. I would like to see that, be happy to see that. As far as the position players go, have at it. I don't think it affects them at all. Junior will be starting. It'll be great to see Yandy out there when he gets out there. No issue there. I would say if Martinez and Drew don't get in the game, I'm cool with that. If they do, as long as, you know, the Rays pitching staff is cool with it, and as long as they're cool with it, that's fine. I would like to see Baker in the game and expect to see Yandy and obviously Junior starting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. It's worth noting that both the Rays and Yankees games have gone final. Yankees managed to beat the Nationals. I think they swept them too. The Rays fall short in the final game against the Mariners, do not get the sweep. And therefore, we are finishing the first half 56-38 and three games up on the Yankees. Great. So that's the All-Star break. And then my favorite time of year, the trade deadline. Now, Bob Nightingale. Now, whatever your thoughts on Bob Nightingale are, let's take them with a pinch of salt. Okay. But he does occasionally pick up a scoop. But he has claimed that the Rays are going to be aggressive buyers at the deadline and went out of his way to mention, first of all, Tarek Skubal. Mm-hmm. As a name that has been linked to the Rays, but also Ketel Marte, a man that we mentioned a lot during the offseason. He also mentioned that they're going to go for Marte. However, that feels like a kind of pie in the sky option, with Luis Arraez being a backup option for them. Those were the three names he mentioned. Let's start with Skubal. Do you think the Rays should give up the haul for Skubal? Because he will take a haul.
The thing about Skubal that I think is, I think it's part of the reason why he's available and why, you know, this conversation is even being had right now. When you think about it from Detroit's perspective, is that he is a free agent after this season.
So it's
a rental. So I think that if I'm giving up a haul, and I think when we say haul, we're talking about a top 10 prospect in our organization, potentially like a Theo Gillen type we might have to give up, or someone that's in that arena. Maybe we give them Brody Hopkins, right?
Right.
Like kind of a, hey, here's Tarek Skubal later, you know, that you're going to have, right? And if we're going to do that, I do not want us doing that, to be totally honest with you. If we are, like, I mean, obviously, if we make a run at re-signing him, it just doesn't happen. Like, and we make him a real actual offer, then like whatever. But I do not want us to give up a haul for a guy that we are not going to get more than what would we be talking about here from a starter? We're talking about like 10 starts. Yeah. Like maybe 10 starts, that feels like not a good decision. I mean, and again, if he ends up coming and giving 10 amazing starts and then it actually ends up being like 15 or 16 because we go win a World Series, then it's great. Right. Who cares, right? But I think that I'm a little bit loath to just mortgage the future completely. As good as the team has been, I'm like, man. But if the idea is, hey, we want to bring in Skubal. We're going to make a real run to, you know, maybe it is really like a sign and trade type scenario where it's like, we're going to trade for him. And by the way, we're already negotiating with him and we're going to sign him to an extension. And if that's what's happening, then I'm all for it. But I don't think that's going to happen. I just, like, when you think about what Skubal's going to command, what he's going to be looking for, you know, he's 29 years old right now. He's in his 29-year-old season. So he's going to be looking for a contract that's going to basically take him to the end of his career. That's what he's going to be looking for. And obviously he's amazing. So I don't know that anybody would say, hey, I don't want that. Like, the dude has pitched almost 200 innings in the last two seasons, had a little bit of an injury bug to begin the year, but it's been great since coming back. And he's been maybe the best pitcher in baseball over the last two or three years. So, I mean, obviously there's a ton of value there. He's worth whatever he's going to get paid, but I just will be stunned if the Rays are actually looking to spend that kind of money on him. When you also consider that they've got to extend Junior, and they probably need to do it this offseason, because if you wait any longer, it's going to get really hard and it could potentially get ugly quickly if you don't extend him. So, like, I think the reality is they're only going to get Scooble if they trade for him for part of the year. So, with that being said, if we make a trade for him and we're not giving up any of, like, our top three guys, then, like, I'm okay with it. But if we have to give up, like, Gillen or Hopkins or whoever that's in our sort of top three or four guys, I'm not necessarily on board with that.
Sure. I mean, the only trade that I could imagine comparing this to that I can think of is when CC Sabathia got traded to the Brewers from the Guardians. Right. He was a rental, and he went sicko mode for them, right? And, like, took them to an NLCS and, I think he made 17 starts, 11-2, 165 ERA for the Brewers. Crazy. Like, that's the best case scenario.
Sure.
And if Scooble turns up and does that, is that worth a Flewelling or a Hopkins? Yeah, probably.
Honestly, probably. I just really don't want to give up Gillen. I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Going for a rental. I don't think you give up Gillen for a rental.
I don't think so. But I do think I would give up Hopkins. I do think I would give up Hopkins for him. I think that's a fair, like, Hopkins plus something else. But I just think if you start talking about any of the other, like, you know, any of the other top prospects that the Rays have, like, I just don't know. I just it's tough.
Okay.
It's just tough for me for a rental.
So let's talk about Ketel Marte then. Let's talk about him. This was described as unlikely, mainly because Marte has 10-2 rights, 10-5 rights rather, which means that he can veto any trade. And if he can veto any trade, would he want? And apparently, it is reported that he would be likely to decline any trade because he wants to stick around with Arizona. So it would be hard. I know the Rays had interest in him over the offseason, but Marte is contracted until at least 2030 with a player option for 2031. So it wouldn't be a rental. That would probably require a Theo Gillen. But it would be an obviously weakest position, and he is like an all-star caliber second baseman. Now, he's been okay. He hasn't been at his peak this year. He's still been pretty good, but he hasn't been the peak of his powers. This would probably take a Gillen and a Hopkins, I would say. Would you do that?
No, because number one, like you just said, the dude is having his worst year since 2022 right now. And he's only getting older from this point. He's 32, like you just said. And you're stuck with him basically the rest of his career unless you trade him again. So to give up Gillen for that just feels like I just don't know that I could do it. I could probably give up anybody else, to be honest, because he is, like, I don't think he's going to be a 110 by the end of the year, but I just don't know that I could. I don't know that I could do Gillen for that. And I think you're right, because how long you're going to have him for, and because he has an amazing track record. You know, he's got a career 120 WRC plus, and a career almost 35 F4. So, you know, he's been great for a long time. But I just, like, it just feels like this, that could be a disastrous trade where Marte just falls off a cliff. You're stuck in an albatross. It's not quite an albatross. It's not an awful contract. It's not bad. It's like a 15 mil a year contract. It's not terrible at all. But man, if he's not able to sort of keep it going, it also makes the Brandon Lowe trade look awful, like even worse now, because now you're giving up resources to get somebody who is currently playing worse than the guy that you had for a little bit, and you're paying him a little bit more to do that. Marte, you're paying Marte a little bit more than you were going to pay Brandon to do that.
Yeah.
And I get the desire for him. I do also like that he's a switch hitter. Like there's a lot of things to like about him, but I don't know. What do you think?
Would I be pumped if it came through like Poisson on deadline day said the Rays are acquiring Ketel Marte? Yeah, I would probably be fired up. And I think it would be hard not to be.
Yeah.
Gillen almost feels close to untouchable at this stage. But there's a real opportunity to go win something here, isn't there? And I think if Gillen goes to win, if we win the World Series this year because we got Ketel Marte and Schumel.
Oh, sure.
I don't think I would care that Gillen goes on to win three MVPs for whoever with the Diamondbacks. But again, it's not as simple as if you construct the best team, you win the World Series. Right. It's always a risk. Marte, I'm slightly more okay with it just because of the years that you're going to keep him. The Rays are, I think, happy to go aggressive as well. I mean, they literally tried to rent Ohtani for Junior. That was a thing that the Angels turned down.
Yeah. And I mean, man, to be an Angels fan. They have been the Rays are going to be aggressive talk has come from just about every insider out there. It's not just a Boob thing or a Bob thing, excuse me. Not just a Bob Nightingale thing.
Channeled him there.
I did. It's not just a Bob Nightingale thing. It's been out there from basically every insider.
Yeah, 100%. Poisson said it. Rosenthal said it. So it'll be really interesting to see that what happens on deadline day. I mean, Arise is a really fun one because he is just a rental. Probably not going to be that expensive because the Giants are just going to be selling. Arise has had a really good year, maybe his best year yet with the Giants. He's still just kind of a singles guy. He won't hit many home runs. Doesn't walk as much as you'd want him to, but will hit a lot of singles. But what's crazy, what the weird thing about Arise this year is he's also randomly got really good at defense. He's got 99th percentile outs above average at second base. He's got 10 outs above average at second base this year. And what he used to, everyone used to say, well, he's not a very good fielder. He can't hit for any power. He doesn't walk. He just is a singles merchant. But he is playing good defense now as well. So that can work. That can work, especially for a cheap option. What I will say is it's not Oracle Park is what it's called these days. Oracle Park is, I think, really tailored to Arise's skill set, where there's deep alleys in the outfield, which will mean that his kind of slapping the ball around strategy is far more likely to be affected in that kind of spacious outfield of Oracle Park than it would be, say, in San Diego. It was in San Diego, or how it might even be in the Trop. So I could imagine us getting him and he regresses a little bit, but he is a cheap upgrade at second base. It's not like necessarily the pendulum swing, but it's a needle move.
Yeah. And again, like the reason why I like Arise better than Marte is we got power. We don't necessarily need more home runs. Like, I think we've got all the home runs we can handle with Junior Caminero and Aranda and Yandy. Like there's power there. So to put a guy that is an on-base machine in front of those guys, like I would feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, he's kind of a better version of Palacios. He's kind of like a plus +5 to all stats on Palacios.
Yeah,
I would say. And if you can get him cheap for a rental, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. Now, something that's not been linked to the Rays, this is going to be my last thing that I say, because I know we got to get out of here. But the one thing the Rays have not been tied to is any outfield help.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's one of those things where the Jacob Melton getting healthy and hopefully being a post All-Star break call up, they're just sort of like, hey, we're good. We don't really need to make any moves. Or if it's one of those where they're not enthralled with any of the sort of the names. There's really not a whole lot of awesome names out there from a outfield perspective that's sort of being talked about at the trade deadline right now. And so, like, that sort of is what it is. I mean, I think that the Rays seem like, obviously, the Rays were willing to trade Brandon Lau for Jacob Melton. So they feel a certain way about him. So if that's what the Rays think, like, to be honest, like, between Mesa Jr., between Mullins, between JDL, between Chandler, I'm kind of in the scenario where I'm like, you know, like, if we don't make a huge upgrade, there's not really a great upgrade to make. I'm kind of okay not forcing one in there and just saying, let's let it happen. I think second base is a much more like, yeah, hey, this isn't working out. Like, this is a place where we should make an improvement here. Same thing with, hey, we need an arm. We got to have an arm. And so, like, I've said it a couple of times now, but we need a bat and an arm. Second base is the most obvious place to put the bat. If you found a great outfield bat that you could get, that would be fine. You could easily find a spot for him there. And you need a starting pitcher. Like, I think to sustain at the current level that you guys were at right now, it's going to really put some strain on the guys we're running out there right now. If we don't make any changes, don't make any additions, but with an addition, it becomes an awesome group of guys. Same thing with the bats. Like, we need just one more guy to take a little bit of pressure off the guys who have been performing to this point. And so I think a guy like an Arias can be a table setter that allows the other guys in there in the lineup to just feed off of that. And, you know, maybe he bats, maybe him and Yandy bat one or two there, and then you've got Aranda and Junior behind driving in the runs. That's an awesome top of a lineup there. Same thing where if you now insert a Scooble into the rotation along with the guys you currently have there, and you bump a Seymour or a Jax back to the bullpen to allow them to sort of mitigate some of the guys like Rasmussen and Shane, who might need to mitigate their innings a little bit, you can, like, there's a lot of good things that can happen there. And so if outfield is not the place where we're going to go to make the improvement, I'm okay with that. But I think it's more so a vote of confidence in Jacob Melton than anything else.
Yeah, completely agree. Rosenthal tweeted earlier today, well, not tweeted, but put in the Athletic, that the Rays will also be looking at catcher. But we can talk more about that closer to the time, I think.
Yeah, and again, we're going to be – the nice thing is we, as if you follow the show, you know, we record on Sundays most of the time. And Sunday after next, I think, maybe it's two Sundays after.
Yeah.
I think it's two Sundays after this next one. We're going to be right before the deadline. So if you want to hear our right before the deadline thoughts – stick around, do us a huge favor, drop us a subscribe, drop us a follow on whatever platform you enjoy the show on, so you know when we're going live. We got so much more to talk about post All-Star break to get us ready for the second half of the season. We have enjoyed talking ball with you for the first half of the season. It's been a huge amount of fun. We hope you'll stick with us through the second half. We hope that the Rays will continue this level of success as well through the second half. I think that they will, but whether they do or not, it's going to be Rays up.
It's going to be Rays up, and I just realized it's the World Cup final next Sunday.
World Cup, it's coming up. Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.